You promised me forever, Marcus. Luna whispered, her voice trembling but refusing to break, as she stood in the doorway of their shared bedroom. Marcus scrambled backward against the headboard, the tangled silk sheets offering no dignity. Beside him, Chloe, Luna's best friend since childhood, could not even summon the courage to meet her eyes, pulling the duvet tightly around her shoulders. Luna, please, it's not what it looks like. Marcus choked out, a pathetic, illogical defense against the undeniable truth laid bare in front of her. It is exactly what it looks like, Luna replied, the absolute coldness in her own tone startling her. Keep the ring. Keep the apartment. Keep her. She turned on her heel, leaving her keys on the hall table. The heavy mahogany door clicked shut behind her, sealing the end of her old life. She had nothing left. The tires hissed against the slick asphalt, cutting a solitary path through the torrential midnight downpour. Luna gripped the leather steering wheel until her knuckles turned a stark, bruised white. She did not cry. The tears seemed trapped behind a heavy dam of sheer, unadulterated shock. The dashboard clock read 2:14 a.m. It had been barely an hour since her entire universe had violently collapsed inward, yet it felt as though she had been driving for an eternity. The rhythmic, frantic beating of the windshield wipers was the only sound she allowed herself to hear. No radio, no music, just the mechanical sweep clearing away the rain, over and over, though no mechanism could clear the image permanently seared into her retinas. Marcus, Chloe, the twisted sheets, the look of utter, cowardly panic on their faces when the bedroom door had swung open. Luna swallowed the dry ache in her throat. She needed a destination, somewhere far beyond the suffocating borders of her former life. The highway signs blurred past, illuminated briefly by her high beams, until a large green reflective board caught her eye. Altaria, 50 miles, the capital city of the neighboring sovereign state of Elysia. Marcus had always vehemently hated Altaria. He called it pretentious, too steeped in old-world traditions and rigid royal protocols. For Luna, in this shattered moment, that very hatred served as a guiding beacon. She took the exit, the tires hydroplaning slightly before catching traction on the rougher concrete. 20 minutes later, she pulled into a desolate, fluorescent-lit gas station on the outskirts of the city. The harsh white lights buzzed above like angry hornets. Stepping out of the car, the biting autumn wind whipped her damp hair across her face, carrying the sharp scent of ozone and wet pine. She walked inside, her boots squeaking against the linoleum floor, and purchased a cup of bitter, tar-black coffee from a machine that looked like it hadn't been serviced in a decade. As she wrapped her freezing hands around the flimsy paper cup, trying to siphon its meager warmth, her phone buzzed heavily in her coat pocket. The vibration felt like a physical assault. She pulled it out. The screen glared in the dim, flickering light of the convenience store. Chloe, 3 missed calls, followed immediately by a text notification from Marcus. Luna, please, let me explain. It was a stupid mistake. Where are you? Please come back. A hollow, jagged laugh escaped her lips, startling the tired clerk dozing behind the counter. A mistake was forgetting to buy milk. A mistake was taking the wrong exit on the freeway. Falling into bed with her best friend of 15 years was a calculated series of intentional betrayals. Luna stared at the glowing rectangle in her hand. It held thousands of photos, years of carefully curated memories, and the digital tethers to people who had just murdered her trust. The logic of her decision crystallized in the freezing rain. If she went back, there would be shouting. There would be tears and pathetic justifications. Marcus would weaponize her emotions, and Chloe would cry victim. Luna absolutely refused to give them the satisfaction of her grief. Her complete absence would be her final, unbreakable boundary. With a calm that genuinely frightened her, Luna walked back out into the unrelenting rain. She stepped toward the heavy green dumpster at the edge of the lot. She did not power the device down. She simply let it slip from her trembling fingers. It fell into the dark, rusted metal bin, clattering violently against the damp refuse. The screen glowed for a fraction of a second before vanishing into the shadows. She was disconnected. The phantom weight in her pocket was gone. She was a ghost. By dawn, the storm had broken, leaving the historic streets of Altaria washed clean and gleaming in the pale morning light. The city was a masterpiece of Gothic architecture and modern efficiency, a place where centuries-old stone bridges crossed rivers lined with glass-fronted cafes. Luna found a modest, ivy-draped inn nestled in a quiet cobblestone alleyway near the cathedral district. The elderly woman at the front desk did not ask questions, simply sliding a heavy brass key across the mahogany counter in exchange for a week's payment in cash. Luna ascended the creaking oak stairs to room 302. The space was small but impeccably clean, smelling faintly of lavender and old paper. Heavy velvet curtains blocked out the rising sun, creating a sanctuary of shadows. She set her small duffel bag, hastily packed with just a few sweaters, a pair of jeans, and her passport, onto the floor. She hadn't even taken her toothbrush. Only then, standing in the exact center of the silent room, did the adrenaline finally evaporate. The dam broke. Luna collapsed onto the edge of the quilt-covered mattress, her chest heaving as the first agonizing sob tore through her throat. She curled her knees to her chest, pressing her face deep into the pillows to muffle the sound, and wept. She wept for the future that had been stolen, for the wedding dress currently hanging in a tailor's shop miles away, and for the absolute, terrifying emptiness of the present moment. She had walked away with nothing but her dignity. She did not know who she was anymore. But as exhaustion finally pulled her into a heavy sleep, one truth remained. The old Luna was dead. Whoever was going to wake up in this strange city would have to be forged from the wreckage. 2 weeks bled into one another, distinguished only by the shifting colors of the autumn leaves scattered across Altaria's pristine sidewalks. Luna existed in a state of quiet, functional suspension. She drank black tea at corner cafes, wandered aimlessly through the towering aisles of the National Library, and avoided looking into mirrors for too long. The sharp, agonizing sting of betrayal had dulled into a heavy, persistent ache, like a phantom limb she was slowly learning to navigate without. On a crisp Tuesday afternoon, Luna found herself walking along the wrought iron perimeter of the Royal Gardens. The air was sharp, carrying the earthy scent of roasted chestnuts from a nearby street vendor. The imposing gates of the palace loomed in the distance, a testament to the enduring stability of a monarchy she barely understood. Crowds of tourists and smartly dressed locals moved in a hurried, synchronized dance around her. But Luna drifted through them like a stone sitting at the bottom of a rushing river, present yet entirely separate from the flow of life. She paused at the edge of St. Jude's Square, a sprawling pedestrian plaza bordered by a busy, multi-lane avenue. Waiting for the crosswalk signal to change, Luna shoved her freezing hands deep into the pockets of her oversized wool coat. The sky above was a brilliant, unforgiving blue. That was when she noticed him. He stood a few feet to her left, right at the very edge of the curb. He was tall, dressed in an impeccably tailored charcoal suit that spoke of quiet, understated wealth. Yet, it wasn't his attire that caught her attention. It was the profound, heavy exhaustion radiating from his posture. He was rubbing the bridge of his nose, his eyes briefly closed, looking entirely detached from the bustling city around him. Two men in dark, unassuming overcoats stood several yards behind him, their eyes scanning the passing crowd with a rigid, unnatural intensity. Luna's gaze drifted past the man and fixed on the wide avenue. The traffic was flowing normally, a steady, predictable stream of sedans and delivery trucks. But logic, honed by years of living in chaotic urban environments, suddenly flagged a terrifying anomaly in her peripheral vision. A heavy, black luxury vehicle was currently in the far left lane, but it wasn't following the curve of the road. It was accelerating, fast. The engine roared, a deep, aggressive, unnatural growl that cut sharply through the ambient city noise. Its tires jerked violently to the right, aiming directly for the crowded sidewalk. Aiming directly for the exhausted man in the charcoal suit. Time seemed to fracture, slowing to an agonizing, cinematic crawl. Luna saw the exact trajectory. She saw the heavy, reinforced steel of the vehicle's custom bumper. She saw the man, his eyes opening, realizing a fraction of a second too late that death was hurtling toward him. The two men behind him reached inside their coats, their faces contorted in sudden horror. But the physics of the moment dictated they were far too far away. An inevitable, fatal collision was mathematically certain. Luna did not think. She did not weigh the risks or calculate her own mortality. Her body simply reacted, propelled by an explosive surge of adrenaline and a desperate, subconscious need to prevent another senseless tragedy in a world that already felt incredibly fragile to her. She lunged, closing the distance in two desperate, powerful strides. Luna threw her entire body weight against the man's side. The impact knocked the breath cleanly from her lungs. She wrapped her arms tightly around his shoulders, using her own momentum to drag them both backward. They hit the unforgiving cobblestones hard, a chaotic tangle of limbs and wool coats. A deafening crack ripped through the crisp air as the black vehicle violently mounted the curb, its bumper obliterating the heavy stone bollard exactly where the man had been standing milliseconds prior. Shrapnel of pulverized concrete rained down around them, clattering aggressively against the pavement. The vehicle didn't stop. It violently swerved back onto the road, tires squealing in a massive cloud of acrid white smoke, and disappeared down a narrow side street before the screams of the bystanders even began to register. Absolute chaos erupted. The square descended into blind pandemonium. People shrieked and scattered in every direction. Luna lay flat on her back, her vision blurring dangerously at the edges. A sharp, hot, blinding pain radiated from her left shoulder, but she was breathing. The man was pinned partially beneath her weight. Before Luna could push herself up, the two men in dark coats were there. Rough hands grabbed her, not with gratitude, but with forceful, trained suspicion. They pulled her aggressively off the man, pinning her arms against the cold, wrought iron fence of the gardens. The metal bit viciously into her bruised shoulder, but she didn't have the breath to scream. She saw the dull gleam of a concealed weapon in the guard's hand.
"Stand down. Let her go,"
a voice commanded. It was deep, resonant, and carried an innate authority that instantly froze the guards in their tracks. The man in the charcoal suit pushed himself off the ground. There was gray dirt smeared on his immaculate lapel, and a thin cut above his eyebrow was welling with bright red blood. But his dark, intense eyes were entirely, unblinkingly focused on Luna. He held up a single hand, and the guards immediately stepped back, their heads bowed slightly in deference. He slowly approached her, his chest heaving as the adrenaline crashed through him. The silence between them felt infinitely louder than the screaming crowd surrounding them. "You," he said, his voice dropping to a harsh, disbelieving whisper. Just saved my life. Luna, trembling violently from the adrenaline drop and the searing pain in her arm, looked him directly in the eye. You should pay better attention to the crosswalks, she managed to breathe out, before the shock finally overtook her nervous system. And the bright blue sky faded swiftly into black. The rhythmic, sterile beep of a heart monitor anchored Luna back to consciousness. She slowly opened her eyes to a ceiling of flawless, blindingly white acoustic tiles. The air smelled of sharp antiseptic and freshly laundered linen, completely lacking the usual underlying staleness of a public hospital. As her vision cleared, she realized she was lying in a hospital bed that felt softer than clouds, surrounded by medical equipment that looked sleek, modern, and entirely too expensive. She tried to shift her weight, wincing sharply as a dull, throbbing pain flared in her left shoulder. It was heavily bandaged, immobilizing her arm against her chest in a sling. Her mind raced, violently piecing together the fractured memories. The roaring engine, the desperate lunge, the shattering concrete. The man in the charcoal suit. You suffered a minor dislocation and a fractured clavicle. A calm voice spoke from the shadowed corner of the room. Luna snapped her head toward the sound, ignoring the twinge in her neck. Sitting in a plush, dark leather armchair near the window was the man she had tackled. The ruined charcoal suit had been replaced by a crisp, unbuttoned white dress shirt and dark trousers. The cut above his eye had been expertly stitched, a stark red line against his pale, angular features. He was watching her with an intense, calculated gaze that made the air in the quiet room feel incredibly heavy. The doctors assure me it will heal perfectly, provided you actually rest. He continued, setting aside a silver tablet he had been holding. He stood and walked slowly toward the edge of her bed. Up close, his eyes were a striking, stormy gray, sharp, highly observant, and deeply guarded. "Where am I?" Luna asked, her voice raspy and dry. She noticed the lack of a window facing a bustling street. Instead, the heavy oak doors and foot-thick walls suggested a highly secure, fortified facility. You are in the private medical wing of the royal estate, he answered simply, as if stating the day's weather. Luna blinked, her brain struggling to logically process the information. Logic dictated she had been brought somewhere safe. But the royal estate was an impenetrable fortress reserved only for the highest echelons of Elysian government. Why am I here? A normal emergency room would have sufficed. A faint, almost imperceptible smile touched the corners of his lips. A normal emergency room would have been swarmed by the press within the hour. The physical security of the person who just threw themselves in front of a moving 2-ton vehicle to save a complete stranger required absolute discretion. He pulled a chair closer to the bed and sat down, leaning his forearms on his knees, bringing himself level with her. My security detail ran a preliminary check while you were unconscious. You checked into a local inn exactly 2 weeks ago under the name Luna. No last name provided to the proprietor. You possess zero digital footprint in this city. You carry only cash, and your passport was not on your person. Luna stiffened, a massive defensive wall slamming down over her emotions. The betrayal of her past was still an open, bleeding wound, and she refused to be analyzed. Are you interrogating me? I am trying to understand you, he corrected gently, though his tone held an unyielding firmness. People do not generally risk their own lives for someone they do not know unless they are highly trained professionals, or they have completely lost their intrinsic instinct for self-preservation. Given your civilian clothing and the fact that you threw a sloppy, dislocating shoulder block rather than a tactical tackle, I am heavily assuming the latter. Luna looked away,
staring hard at the pristine white blanket covering her legs. His logical assessment was terrifyingly accurate. In that split second on the curb, she truly hadn't cared if she survived. The absolute emptiness Marcus and Chloe had left behind had made her own life feel entirely expendable, but she was not about to confess her pathetic heartbreak to a stranger in a hospital room. "I saw a car accelerating toward a pedestrian," Luna said coldly, her jaw set tight. "I reacted. It was basic human decency. Don't overanalyze it." He studied her profile, the heavy silence stretching between them. He did not push for more. There was a quiet, profound respect in his restraint that Luna found entirely unfamiliar. Marcus had always loudly demanded explanations for her moods. This man seemed to perfectly read the silence. "I owe you my life, Luna," he said softly, the sincerity in his voice cutting through the tension. "It is a debt I take very seriously. You don't owe me anything. Just let me leave when I can walk." Before he could reply, the heavy oak door clicked open. A man in a tailored Navy military uniform stepped in, his posture rigid and urgent. He bowed his head deeply, not looking at Luna, but addressing the man sitting beside her. "Your Majesty," the officer said, his tone hushed but incredibly tense. "The perimeter is fully secured. The Prime Minister is waiting for your immediate brief on the incident in the secure communications room." Luna's breath caught violently in her throat. Her heart gave a sudden, erratic kick against her ribs, the monitor beside her betraying her rising panic with a rapid, shrill tempo. She slowly turned her head, her eyes wide as she looked at the man in the white shirt. Logic, which had always been her anchor, completely abandoned her. The lack of press, the royal wing, the terrifyingly thorough background check, the puzzle pieces violently snapped together. She hadn't just saved a wealthy businessman. He stood up, adjusting his cuffs with an air of casual, deeply ingrained authority. The exhaustion she had seen on the street was entirely gone, replaced by the formidable, intimidating presence of a man who commanded an entire nation. His posture changed, straightening into something immovable and sovereign. He looked back down at her, seeing the shock finally register and wash over her pale face. A flicker of something akin to amusement, heavily tempered by genuine respect, crossed his features. "I should introduce myself properly," he said, his voice dropping an octave, echoing with power. "I am King David, and as of this afternoon, my life belongs entirely to you." The heavy, suffocating weight of realization settled over Luna like a wool blanket soaked in freezing water. "King David of Elysia." The man currently standing in her hospital room, radiating a quiet, unyielding power, was the sovereign ruler of a nation she had fled to merely out of geographical convenience. For 3 days following the revelation, Luna remained confined to the Royal Medical Wing. Her physical recovery was aggressively managed by a team of silent, highly efficient doctors who spoke in hushed, deferential tones. Her dislocated shoulder ached with a deep, persistent throb, encased in a structured medical sling that forced her left arm tightly against her ribs. But the physical discomfort was entirely secondary to the psychological claustrophobia rapidly taking root in her mind. On the morning of the fourth day, Luna decided she had played the compliant patient long enough. She pushed the luxurious, high thread count duvet aside and swung her legs over the edge of the mattress. The cold marble floor sent a sharp shock up her bare feet. She located her small duffel bag, sitting neatly on a velvet armchair in the corner of the room. Moving with slow, deliberate caution to avoid jarring her collarbone, she managed to change out of the silk hospital gown and into her own clothes. A pair of faded denim jeans and an oversized, dark gray cashmere sweater she had bought years ago.
The familiar fabric felt like a desperately needed armor. She zipped the duffel bag with her good hand, slung it over her uninjured right shoulder, and walked purposefully toward the heavy oak doors. She had survived her world ending once this month. She was not about to become a permanent fixture in someone else's political drama. Luna pulled the heavy brass handle. The door swung open seamlessly, revealing a wide, naturally lit corridor, lined with intricate tapestries and vaulted ceilings. It also revealed two towering men in immaculately tailored dark suits, standing perfectly still on either side of the threshold.
"Good morning, ma'am,"
the guard on the left said, his voice entirely devoid of inflection. He did not move to block her path physically, but his posture shifted, entirely occupying the space. "His Majesty requested you remain in your quarters until he returns from the morning security briefing." "His Majesty does not dictate my schedule," Luna replied, her voice cool and perfectly level, suppressing the sudden spike of adrenaline. "I am discharging myself. Please step aside." The guards exchanged a microscopic glance. "We cannot allow you to leave the perimeter, ma'am. It is for your own safety." "I am a citizen of a foreign nation," Luna stated, her logic cold and precise, leaning heavily on the boundaries she was fiercely trying to rebuild. "You have no legal jurisdiction to hold me here against my will. That is textbook unlawful detainment. They are perfectly aware of international law, Luna," the deep, resonant voice echoed down the long corridor, instantly pulling the tension in the air taut. Luna turned her head. King David was walking toward them, flanked by his own detail. He was dressed in a sharp, dark navy suit, his stride purposeful and commanding. The cut above his eye was healing cleanly, but the shadows beneath his stormy gray eyes suggested he had not slept since the incident in the square. He gestured faintly with his left hand, and the two guards instantly stepped back, melting into the periphery. David stopped a few feet from her, his gaze dropping briefly to the duffel bag slung over her shoulder before meeting her defiant stare. "You are attempting to leave," he observed, stating a fact rather than asking a question. "I am leaving," Luna corrected, tightening her grip on the canvas strap. "I am medically stable. I appreciate the hospitality and the exceptionally discreet medical care. But my involvement in your life ended the moment that car drove away." David exhaled slowly, a heavy, measured breath. He stepped closer, invading her personal space just enough to force her to look slightly up at him. The scent of bergamot and crisp linen surrounded him. "Your involvement in my life began the moment you shattered that bollard with your own body. And logically, it will not end until the people who drove that car are located and neutralized." Luna frowned, a cold knot forming in her stomach. "I was a random bystander. They don't know who I am." "You are the anomaly that ruined a meticulously planned assassination," David countered, his voice dropping to a low, intense register. "They spent months tracking my movements, compromising my security routes, and securing a specialized armored vehicle. They calculated velocity, timing, and my exact pedestrian habits. They calculated everything perfectly, except you." He reached out, his long fingers gently grasping the strap of her duffel bag. He didn't pull it from her, but the weight of his hand anchored her in place. "Assassins operating at this level of sophistication do not believe in random bystanders. They will view you as an unknown variable, a highly trained operative who intercepted their strike. If you walk out of these heavily fortified gates and return to a civilian inn, you will be hunted down and interrogated for affiliations you do not possess. They will kill you simply to tie up the loose end." Luna stared at him, her heart hammering a frantic rhythm against her bruised ribs. The sheer, terrifying logic of his argument dismantled her stubbornness piece by piece. She had run from Marcus to save her sanity, but walking out of this palace meant actively risking her life. "So I am a prisoner," she whispered, the bitterness coating her tongue. "You are a fiercely protected guest," David corrected softly, his eyes searching hers, recognizing the deep, underlying trauma she was trying so desperately to hide. "I know you are running from something, Luna. The emptiness in your eyes when you tackled me told me you had nothing left to lose. But I will not let you throw your life away simply because it currently feels entirely broken. You are staying here. That is not a royal decree. It is a logical necessity." The king's private study was a cavernous, circular room situated in the highest tower of the residential wing. The walls were lined with centuries-old, leather-bound texts, contrasting sharply with the massive, state-of-the-art interactive glass monitors dominating the center of the space. The air was thick with the scent of aged paper, polished mahogany, and the dark, bitter espresso David seemed to consume in continuous, alarming quantities. Luna sat stiffly in a wingback chair, nursing a cup of Earl Grey tea. 3 days had passed since her failed attempt to leave. True to his word, David had not treated her as a prisoner, but rather as an exceptionally high-clearance ward. She was given free roam of the massive private libraries and the enclosed royal gardens, but the perimeter was absolute. Across the room, David stood before a massive digital screen, watching the security footage of St. Jude's Square on a continuous, silent loop. The harsh blue light illuminated the sharp, exhausted angles of his face. His tie was discarded over a chair, the top two buttons of his shirt undone. He had watched the footage 100 times, searching for the crack in his security detail that had allowed the breach. Luna set her teacup down with a soft, ceramic clink. The silence in the room was productive, not oppressive, but her restless mind needed a puzzle to solve. Brooding over Marcus and Chloe's betrayal only led to a dark, spiraling abyss of self-pity, and she fiercely refused to go down that path. She stood up, ignoring the dull ache in her shoulder, and walked slowly toward the glowing monitors. "You are looking for a failure in your detail," Luna said quietly, her eyes tracking the digitized pedestrians scattering on the screen. "You think someone on your team fed them your exact location?" David didn't look away from the monitor. He paused the footage exactly 2 seconds before the black vehicle mounted the curb. "My schedule for that afternoon was classified. Only my immediate security heads and the Prime Minister knew I would be walking through the square. The driver had to know exactly when I would reach that specific crosswalk." "Yes, I am looking for a traitor." Luna stepped closer, the heat radiating from the massive screens warming her face. She had spent the last 5 years as a senior data analyst for a logistics firm in her home country. Her entire professional life was built on identifying microscopic anomalies in massive, chaotic systems. Furthermore, her personal life had just taught her a brutal lesson in missing the subtle, everyday signs of betrayal. Her mind was currently hyper-tuned to notice the things that did not belong. "Play it again," she requested, her tone shifting from a passive guest to a focused professional. "But rewind it 30 seconds before you enter the frame. Focus on the periphery, not the road." David finally looked at her, his dark brows drawing together in slight confusion, but he wordlessly complied. His fingers tapped the glass, dragging the timeline backward. The square was bustling. Tourists, street vendors, businessmen. "Stop!" Luna commanded sharply. She pointed her uninjured right hand at the top left corner of the screen. It was a wide shot showing the elevated terrace of a cafe overlooking the avenue. "There." David zoomed in on the quadrant.
the resolution held sharp. Sitting at a small wrought iron table was a man in a beige trench coat. He was entirely unremarkable, blending perfectly into the autumn aesthetic of the city. He held a newspaper, seemingly reading. He is reading a paper, David noted, his voice skeptical. He isn't looking at the street. He hasn't turned a page in 3 minutes, Luna pointed out, her eyes narrowing as the logic clicked seamlessly together. Watch his left hand, the one resting on the table. David advanced the footage slowly, frame by frame. Luna's breath caught slightly as she watched her own logic manifest. He is tapping the table. David breathed out, the realization dawning instantly. Morse, or a rhythmic cipher. Look at the reflection in the cafe window behind him, Luna continued, her voice entirely steady. He isn't looking at the paper. He is watching the reflection of the crosswalk signal across the street. He is a spotter. But he isn't transmitting to the driver via radio. Your team would have swept for localized frequencies. He's transmitting visually, David finished, his eyes widening slightly as he traced the line of sight. He panned the camera down to street level, 50 yards ahead of the intersection where the attack happened. A street sweeper was standing near the curb, leaning on a broom. The sweeper had a clear, unobstructed view of the man on the terrace. As the man in the beige coat tapped his fingers in a rapid sequence, the street sweeper abruptly dropped his broom and stepped directly onto the very edge of the asphalt. Flashing a bright, highly visible neon yellow rag from his pocket for less than a second. 2 seconds later, the black luxury vehicle roared into the frame, violently accelerating toward the curb. The heavy, profound silence returned to the study. But the atmosphere had completely shifted. It was no longer a room of stagnant frustration. David turned to fully face her. The look in his stormy gray eyes was no longer just the deep, indebted gratitude of a man whose life had been saved. It was a sharp, unmasked, and highly dangerous form of profound respect. He looked at her not as a traumatized civilian, but as an intellectual equal who had just cracked a sophisticated assassination plot wide open in less than 5 minutes. My entire intelligence division analyzed this footage for 72 hours, David said, his voice a low, reverent murmur. And they completely missed the analog relay. Who exactly are you, Luna? Luna looked back at the screen, the ghost of a bitter smile touching her lips. I am someone who recently learned the hard way that you should always pay attention to the quiet things people think you aren't watching. The dining room within the king's private quarters was an intimate, circular space, deliberately designed to feel less like a state banquet hall and more like a sanctuary. A fire crackled warmly in a massive stone hearth, casting dancing golden shadows across the heavily polished mahogany table. Outside the reinforced windows, the city of Altaria glittered beneath a cold, clear, star-studded sky. Dinner was a quiet, highly guarded affair. Luna sat opposite David, awkwardly managing a piece of perfectly seared sea bass with her one functioning hand. The culinary perfection felt entirely lost on her. She chewed mechanically, her mind still buzzing from the breakthrough in the study earlier that afternoon. David had immediately dispatched a covert tactical unit to identify and detain the spotter and the sweeper. The palace was currently operating under an invisible, razor-thin tension. Yet here, in this room, David projected an aura of absolute, unwavering calm. He took a slow sip of a dark red wine, his eyes resting on her with that same intense analytical focus he applied to matters of state. You possess an incredibly disciplined mind, David observed suddenly, breaking the comfortable silence. He set his crystal glass down. The way you processed that security footage, it was entirely devoid of emotion. It was pure, unadulterated logic. It is a rare trait, even among my highest-ranking generals. Luna kept her eyes on her plate, using her fork to push a single roasted carrot in a slow circle. Emotion makes you blind. Emotion makes you believe what you want to believe, rather than what is actually happening right in front of your face. "Is that what happened to you?" David asked. His tone was not interrogative. It was incredibly gentle, an invitation rather than a demand. "Is that why you were wandering the streets of my city at dawn, looking like your entire world had burned to the ground?" Luna's grip on the silver fork tightened until her knuckles turned white. The memory of Marcus's panicked face, the tangled sheets, Chloe's absolute cowardice. It flared violently in her chest, a hot, searing pain that felt far worse than her fractured clavicle. She took a deep, steadying breath, forcefully locking the trauma back down into its dark, compressed box. She would not cry in front of a king. "I trusted two people implicitly," Luna said, her voice dropping to a rigid, detached whisper. "I trusted them with my past, my present, and my future. And I discovered, mathematically, that my trust was completely unilateral. They broke it. Deliberately. So, I removed myself from the equation entirely. That is the extent of the story." David watched her carefully. He did not offer hollow platitudes or shallow sympathies. He understood the profound gravity of a severed bond. "Betrayal is the one weapon no armor can deflect," he said quietly, looking down at his own hands, "because it is always wielded by someone already standing inside your defenses." Luna looked up, surprised by the raw, heavy resonance in his voice. It wasn't philosophical musing. It sounded like personal, bitter experience. Before she could ask him what he meant, the heavy double doors of the dining room opened with a sharp, abrupt click. A tall man with close-cropped silver hair and an impeccably pressed dark suit strode into the room. It was Elias, the head of the royal security apparatus. His face was a mask of professional, rigid urgency. He bypassed protocol entirely, stepping directly to David's side and leaning down to speak in a low, heavily modulated whisper. Luna couldn't hear the words, but she watched David's posture instantly change. The relaxed, contemplative man across the table vanished. The king returned, his spine snapping straight, his jaw clenching so tightly a muscle ticked visibly in his cheek. His stormy eyes darted toward Luna, flashing with a sudden, dark complication. David nodded once to Elias, dismissing him. The security chief bowed sharply and exited the room, leaving a heavy, suffocating silence in his wake. "What is it?" Luna asked, her pulse instinctively accelerating. "Did they find the spotter?" "No," David said, his voice entirely flat, stripped of its previous warmth. He leaned back in his chair, steepling his fingers together. "The issue is not the assassins. The issue is your past, Luna. It seems it is not content to let you remain entirely removed from the equation." Luna's stomach plummeted into an icy, bottomless void. "What do you mean?" David sighed, a heavy, deeply frustrated sound. "My intelligence network constantly monitors international channels for anomalies that might intersect with our security. 20 minutes ago, a highly publicized, urgent missing persons report was filed with the federal police in your home country. It was pushed aggressively to international media outlets." Luna froze, her breath caught in her throat. "A man named Marcus," David continued, his eyes watching her carefully for the reaction. "He claims his fiance vanished under highly suspicious circumstances following a severe psychological break.
He has hired a private, aggressive investigative firm to trace your digital footprint and financial records. They are currently pulling highway camera footage from the night you crossed the border. Luna felt the blood drain entirely from her face. The room seemed to tilt slightly on its axis. Marcus wasn't just looking for her. He was weaponizing her disappearance, framing her entirely justified departure as a mental breakdown to protect his own reputation. He was trying to drag her back into the very wreckage he had caused. If his investigators track your vehicle to Altaria, David stated, the cold, logistical reality settling heavily over them, they will alert the local authorities. The press will flood the city. Your face will be broadcast globally. And the assassins who are currently hunting for the unknown, highly trained operative who ruined their strike, will suddenly have a name, a face, and a very vulnerable civilian target. The golden cage she had been fighting against had just become the only thing keeping her alive. The past she had tried to bury was now a beacon, actively drawing a lethal threat directly to her door. The heavy, suffocating reality of Marcus's maneuver hung in the dining room like a noxious gas. For a terrifying minute, Luna felt the familiar, paralyzing grip of panic closing around her throat. Marcus was not simply looking for her. He was authoring a narrative where she was unstable, irrational, and entirely incapable of surviving without him. He was using the media to build a cage far more restrictive than any physical prison, intending to drag her back and gaslight her into submission. David watched her in silence, his stormy gray eyes tracking the rapid, fearful processing of her thoughts. He did not offer empty reassurances. He waited for the panic to either consume her or break against the unyielding stone of her intellect. Luna closed her eyes, taking a slow, ragged breath that pulled painfully against her fractured clavicle. When she opened them, the fear had receded, replaced by an icy, absolute clarity. Emotion had made her vulnerable to Marcus once. She would not allow it to happen a second time. "He is banking on my silence," Luna said, her voice dropping to a low, clinical register. "He assumes that because I left without a word, I will remain entirely passive. He wants his investigators to find a frightened, broken woman hiding in a motel room. So, we give them exactly what they are looking for. Just not here." David leaned forward, intrigued, resting his elbows on the polished mahogany table. "You propose we create a decoy." "I propose we create a digital ghost," Luna corrected, her analytical mind shifting gears with a terrifying, flawless precision. "My background is in logistics and data anomalies. I know exactly how these private investigation firms operate. They are looking for credit card pings, passport flags at border crossings, and highway toll transponders. We control the data. We control their entire investigation." 10 minutes later, they were back in the king's private study. The massive, interactive glass monitors, previously displaying the assassination footage, were now split into global maps, cascading streams of encrypted data. David had summoned his head of cyber intelligence, a quiet, intensely focused woman named Dr. Aris, who stood respectfully by the console, awaiting orders. "Marcus's investigators are pulling highway footage from the night I left," Luna explained, pointing to the digitized map of her home country with her uninjured arm. "My car is currently parked in a long-term, cash-only lot near the Altaria train station. If they trace the license plate there, they will assume I boarded a domestic train." "Dr. Aris, can you insert a fabricated passenger manifest entry into the regional railway database?" "Easily, ma'am," Dr. Aris replied, her fingers flying across a haptic keyboard. "Where would you like to go?" "Somewhere chaotic. Somewhere a woman experiencing a severe psychological break might impulsively flee to escape her life," Luna reasoned, stepping closer to the screen. a major international transit hub. Route me to the coastal port city of Viridia. From there, generate a falsified credit card charge using my compromised account, purchasing a one-way ferry ticket across the channel to the sovereign island of Kaelin. It is a known tax haven with abysmal extradition laws and severely fragmented digital infrastructure. David watched her from the center of the room, a profound sense of awe washing over his sharp features. The traumatized woman he had pulled from the cobblestones had entirely vanished, replaced by a brilliant, ruthless tactician dismantling her enemy's strategy piece by piece. "If they trace you to Kaelin," David noted, crossing his arms, "they will hit a dead end. The private firm will be forced to send physical operatives to comb the island. It will consume their resources, exhaust their budget, and completely divert their attention away from Altaria." "Exactly," Luna nodded, the adrenaline keeping her exhaustion at bay. "Furthermore, if the assassins monitoring the International Wire pick up Marcus's highly publicized search, they will follow the exact same breadcrumbs. They will assume the highly trained operative who intercepted their strike is attempting to vanish into the island's criminal underworld. We send both of our problems on a wild goose chase thousands of miles away." "Do it," David ordered Dr. Aris, his voice resonating with absolute authority. "Construct the digital trail flawlessly. I want it to withstand the highest level of forensic scrutiny." As the cyber chief worked, David stepped up beside Luna. The heat from the monitors illuminated the pale, exhausted curves of her face. They stood shoulder to shoulder, staring at the shifting global map. "You are remarkably proficient at completely erasing your own existence," David murmured quietly, his tone laced with a complex mixture of admiration and quiet sorrow. "When the people you trust most erase your value," Luna replied, not looking away from the screen. "You learn very quickly how to finalize the transaction." David reached out, his hand hovering for a fraction of a second before gently resting on her uninjured right shoulder. The touch was entirely grounding, lacking any of the possessive entitlement she was used to. "You are not erased here, Luna. In this room, you are the most visible, vital person present. The digital decoy operated with flawless, brutal efficiency. Within 48 hours, David's intelligence network intercepted encrypted communications, confirming that both Marcus's private investigators and a shadow cell of known international mercenaries had heavily shifted their focus toward the island of Kaelin. The immediate threat to Luna's life receded, but the localized tension within the palace walls tightened to the point of breaking. The spotter from the cafe and the street sweeper had completely vanished, undoubtedly liquidated by their own employers the moment the assassination failed. But the internal mole, the traitor who had provided David's highly classified pedestrian schedule to the strike team, remained securely embedded within the royal estate. Luna's physical recovery progressed steadily. Her arm was removed from the heavy sling, replaced by a discreet, supportive brace beneath her clothes. To manage the suffocating anxiety of confinement, David had granted her highly restricted, read-only access to the palace's internal logistical networks. She spent her days sequestered in a secure wing of the royal library, treating the palace's daily operations like a massive, complex data set waiting to be cracked. She cross-referenced security rotations, catering deliveries, encrypted radio logs, and maintenance schedules against David's movements over the past 6 months. The sheer volume of data would have broken a lesser mind, but Luna found a strange, rhythmic comfort in the numbers. Numbers, unlike fiancé and best friends, did not lie. On a rainy Thursday afternoon, exactly 3 weeks after she had arrived in Altaria, Luna found the anomaly. She immediately requested an urgent audience with the king. 10 minutes later, she bypassed the heavy security detail and stepped into David's private study. He was reviewing state documents, looking impeccably sharp but deeply tired. He immediately set his pen down as she entered. "You found something," he stated, correctly reading the sharp, focused intensity radiating from her posture. Luna walked directly to the interactive monitor, pulling a secure tablet from her pocket and syncing it to the main screen. A complex, color-coded spreadsheet illuminated the room. The spotter in the cafe communicated visually. Luna began, her voice steady and professional. "Which means the internal mole could not use digital or radio communications to transmit your schedule. Doing so would leave a traceable signal within the palace's closed-loop network. They had to use a physical, analog method to pass the information to the outside world." David stood, walking slowly toward the screen, his full attention locked on her analysis. "Go on." "I analyzed the egress logs of every single civilian contractor, staff member, and guard leaving the palace grounds over the last 6 months," Luna explained, tapping the glass to highlight a specific column of data. "I cross-referenced their departure times against the exact moments your classified off-site schedules were finalized by the Prime Minister's office." She swiped the screen, isolating a single, repetitive data point. "There is exactly one service routine that mathematically correlates with the finalization of your schedule, every single time." David stared at the highlighted text, his jaw clenching so tightly, a muscle feathered in his cheek. "The laundry service. Specifically, the removal of the soiled linens from the diplomatic guest wing," Luna confirmed. "The linens are transported via commercial truck to an off-site, heavily vetted cleaning facility in the city. The schedule of that truck's departure perfectly aligns with the exact hour your security detail locks in your movements. The mole isn't transmitting data. They are writing your schedule down, slipping it into a specific laundry bag, and shipping it right out the front gate." The profound silence in the room was heavy with betrayal. It was not a high-ranking general or sophisticated cyber attack. It was a terrifyingly simple, incredibly patient exploitation of a mundane routine. "Who manages the diplomatic wing logistics?" David asked, his voice dropping to a dangerously quiet register. "A senior logistics coordinator named Thomas Vance," Luna replied softly. "He has been employed here for 12 years. He possesses the necessary clearance to view the broader security preparations and direct access to the service corridors." David did not shout. He did not show outward fury, but the sudden, absolute coldness in his gray eyes was terrifying to behold. He pressed a button on his desk console. "Elias, bring Thomas Vance to the subterranean holding facility immediately. Do not alert him. Do not let him speak to anyone." He turned back to Luna, the coldness instantly fading into that familiar, profound respect. "We will feed Vance a fabricated, highly classified schedule tonight. If he attempts to drop a note into the outbound laundry, we will have our undeniable proof. And we will have the leverage to force him to name his employers." That evening, the trap snapped shut with absolute, quiet precision. Vance was apprehended in the service corridors, a heavily encrypted micro drive hidden inside a folded napkin destined for the laundry carts. The threat within the walls was neutralized. As David returned to the private study late that night, looking exhausted but finally unburdened, he found Luna standing by the massive windows, watching the rain fall over the glittering city. "It is done," David said quietly, stepping up beside her. "Vance is in custody. He is already talking to Elias. The network that hired him will be dismantled by morning." Luna let out a long, shaky breath, the residual tension of the past 3 weeks finally draining from her shoulders. "Then the board is clear." "Yes," David replied, turning his head to look at her. "The board is entirely clear. The grand ballroom of the royal palace, was a masterpiece of gilded mirrors, cascading crystal chandeliers, and centuries of aristocratic history. Tonight, it was filled with the highest echelons of Elysian society, foreign dignitaries, and political elite, all gathered for the annual Winter Solstice Gala. It was David's first major public appearance since the incident in St. Jude's Square. The security presence was invisible but absolute. Luna stood on the sweeping marble balcony overlooking the ballroom floor, safely concealed in the shadows of heavy velvet drapery. She wore a floor-length, deep emerald silk gown, a quiet gift delivered to her quarters that morning. Her collarbone had fully healed, leaving only a faint phantom ache when it rained. Down below, King David navigated the complex political waters with effortless, commanding grace. He smiled, he nodded, he shook hands, projecting the image of an unbreakable, absolute sovereign. Yet, Luna noticed the subtle tension in his shoulders, the way his stormy gray eyes constantly scanned the perimeter, searching the crowds. She knew exactly what he was looking for. He was looking for anomalies. He was looking for her. Over the past 2 months, their dynamic had shifted from protector and ward to an intensely private, deeply intellectual partnership. She had become his quiet sounding board, reviewing policy logic and security protocols with a ruthless, unemotional clarity that he heavily relied upon. But tonight marked a definitive end. The threat was gone. Marcus had publicly abandoned his search, utterly humiliated when the Kalin authorities found zero trace of his unstable fiancé, leading the press to turn on him and his fabricated narrative. Luna's old life was truly dead, and her temporary sanctuary in Altaria was no longer a logistical necessity. She was entirely free to walk out the front gates and disappear into the world. A soft click of the balcony doors drew her attention. David stepped out into the cool night air, instantly leaving the loud, overwhelming noise of the gala behind. He looked incredibly striking in his formal midnight blue uniform, the heavy silver medals catching the moonlight. He walked toward her, stopping a few feet away. The tension in his shoulders instantly evaporated. "You are hiding?" David observed gently, his eyes tracing the elegant line of her emerald gown. "I am observing," Luna corrected, a soft smile touching her lips. "You project authority very well. They believe you are invincible." "I am not invincible, Luna," David replied, his voice dropping to a quiet, intimate resonance. He stepped closer, invading her space with a deliberate, grounding warmth. 2 months ago, I was seconds away from dying on a wet pavement. I survived solely because a woman whose world had just shattered decided that my life was worth saving." He reached out, his long fingers gently grasping her hand. He did not pull her. He simply offered an anchor. "You told me once that emotion makes you blind, that logic is the only absolute truth. So, let us look at the logic of our current equation." Luna's heart began to beat a sudden, frantic rhythm against her ribs, but she did not pull her hand away. "Go on." "Logically, you have dismantled a sophisticated assassination ring, exposed an embedded traitor, and manipulated an international private investigation firm into complete obsolescence," David stated, his thumb tracing the knuckles of her hand. "You possess a mind that operates on a level I have rarely encountered. You do not panic. You analyze. You solve." He stepped half a pace closer, forcing her to look slightly up into his intense, stormy eyes. "Logically, a king does not need a traditional, passive consort. He needs an equal. He needs a partner who sees the hidden threats, who understands the heavy, unseen board, and who is not afraid to stand her ground when the world violently fractures." Luna's breath hitched. She searched his face, looking for pity, for an imbalance of power, for the same fragile, conditional affection Marcus had offered. She found absolutely none of it. She found only profound respect, unwavering trust, and a deep, deeply rooted devotion. "I am not royal, David," Luna whispered, the last remnants of her fear trying to find a foothold. "I am a data analyst who ran away from a broken engagement. You are the woman who shattered a stone bollard with her own body to protect a stranger," David corrected fiercely, raising his free hand to gently cup her cheek. "Titles are inherited. Sovereignty is proven. And you, Luna, have already proven yourself a queen in every way that logically matters." He leaned in slowly, giving her ample time to retreat. She didn't. When his lips finally met hers, it was not a desperate, chaotic collision. It was a deliberate, grounding promise. It felt like the final, perfect piece of a complex equation sliding flawlessly into place. Luna closed her eyes, entirely surrendering to the warmth. The old Luna had died in the freezing rain weeks ago. But the woman who stood on the balcony, held securely in the arms of the king, was unbroken, fiercely intelligent, and exactly where she was mathematically meant to be. Luna's journey from a devastating betrayal to standing as an intellectual equal beside a king proves that sometimes the most profound strength is forged in the absolute wreckage of our past. She didn't just survive her trauma. She weaponized her logic to protect a nation and found a love built on genuine, unwavering respect rather than hollow promises. If you enjoyed this grounded, high-stakes tale of intellect, resilience, and unexpected romance, please consider liking this story and sharing it with others who appreciate a strong, brilliant protagonist. Don't forget to subscribe for more original cinematic stories that blend thrilling logic with deep emotional resonance.